A new amphitheater and practice field are coming to downtown Jacksonville after the city council approved a deal with the Jaguars this week. And Donald Trump continues to dominate the national headlines with his inflammatory comments about Muslims. Those are some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jessica Palumbo, sitting in for Melissa Ross, who's sitting in for Diane Rehm in Washington. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio, and now subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just ahead, all the news of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Then later, local company Pajama Monsters is growing. That's ahead. But first, it's Friday, and that means it's time for our weekly Media Roundtable. Here today, Larry Hannon of the Florida Times Union. Good morning.
Good to be here.
A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. Good morning, A.G.
Good morning, Jessica.
And Claire Goforth, writer at Folio Weekly, is here. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning.
Plenty of news from the week to discuss. From a more modern skyway coming downtown to controversial conversions of many urban core schools now before the Duval County School Board. But first this morning, it was unanimous. The Jacksonville City Council voted on Tuesday to approve a new lease with Jaguars owner Shad Khan that will put $45 million in tourism tax toward a new amphitheater, practice field, and upgrades to Everbank Field's club levels. Khan, of course, will put $45 million of his own money into the project. Several council members speaking before the vote said they originally opposed the deal but came around after seeing the numbers. To our listeners, what do you think about the city's big investment? Join our conversation right now at 549-2937. So on Tuesday night before the council vote, the theme among the council members seemed to be, you got it wrong. There's a lot of misinformation out there about this. Larry, you're shaking your head.
I think at this point, just saying no to Shad Khan is kind of like saying no to Jesus Christ. It's just not something this council can realistically do. He is just above them in every way. And maybe at some point his popularity will decrease to the point where people can nitpick what he does. But at this point, I just don't think it's something a city councilman can do.
Not a lot of nitpicking going on with this deal, you think?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
But, I mean, we just got the Jumbotrons a couple of years ago. What's next? I mean, I believe AG made this point that in 2 years, are we going to want to pay for a cover for the field? I mean, I understand the need for a new practice field and the amphitheater. I suppose that could be a good idea, but aren't there a lot of other projects that we could use these funds for? I mean, what about the folks at the Maritime Museum? They lost their facility, they lost their museum. It would have been a couple of $1,000s to keep them open, but because there's no billionaire behind them holding his toys with the thinly veiled sort of threat that people perceive that he might take the Jags and go somewhere else, we just, fall in line.
That is a major factor. People are still afraid he's going to move the team to London, move the team to Los Angeles, and especially when he's willing to pay some of his own money for it, it's just hard to say no because you don't want to be the person who killed the deal and then have to explain a year later why the Jaguars are now playing in St. Louis.
The mechanics of actually how it went down were interesting. There was one committee member who raised objections, Danny Becton, and he did it in a couple of committees. He spoke at great length. The second committee, he spoke to in land use and zoning. He sort of irked Sam Moussa, the chief administrative officer of the city, and they basically took it to a vote, and he was the one vote against in both committees. Now, the thing is that you got to watch with this is Sam Moussa and Paul Hardin have a really, really good relationship. They negotiated the deal long before the legislation was introduced, and they pretty much ensured that it was going to be a done deal. The meaningful council people were actually convinced in meetings before the legislation was even introduced. And when they got to council on Tuesday, Danny Becton gave his little speech, and he flipped. Mm-hmm. He decided to vote for it and was unanimous. I talked to Becton. I talked to Paul Hardin after the vote. Paul Hardin said they had a 90-minute conversation. Danny Becton said they had a 30-minute conversation. Danny Becton said he was trying to negotiate better terms for the city. He didn't get those better terms from the city, but he voted for the deal anyway. So, I mean, that's kind of an indication of the relationship that the Jaguars have built with the executive and legislative branches. All of those trips to the owner's box and those champagne flutes that Chris Hong at the Times Union wrote about and all of those other perks, people think that might have you know, led into the vote. Katrina Brown said, well, you know, we didn't vote based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people are going to raise a question. And if you look at the mechanics of the deal, it's not the bed tax that's paying for it. It's debt. It's borrowed money. The bed tax will service the debt. And the mayor's office's own estimates are that it's going to take about 25 years to do that. And, you know, that's if the bed tax maintains as it is. That is, if we don't have a recession, if we don't have something that impedes travel with like a double-digit dip in the bed tax as has happened in the past, then best case scenario is paid for in 25 years. So it's a generational commitment. That's going to be where the stadium is going to be for a couple of decades. But they seem to think that that's going to keep Shad Khan on board, give him the revenue stream that he needs to offset the fact that we're a small market.
I really think it was interesting that it was a unanimous vote. I mean, when you start reading the comments under these stories where the actual writer, you know, people around Jacksonville are writing in, the support is not unanimous in the city. So, I mean, one of the commenters actually hilariously suggested calling the bowl the taxpayer slayer bowl this upcoming holiday season. You know, I mean, shouldn't there be a little bit of dissent?
That's
this
really
is a lot of money.
Populism, though, because I mean, the deal when it was dropped in was unformed. They had 24 some council amendments. They had hours and hours of committees. They, you know, they worked toward making it a better deal. I mean, I was opposed to it when they dropped the original. I think the final version was a better deal with more protections for the city. And that's what the process is supposed to do. But I didn't see anybody but the usual five public commenters at council. There wasn't some popular outcry. Mm-mm. If you're writing on a comment page, if you're being an internet gangster, it doesn't mean you're being an activist. It just means you're blowing off on a content, you know, on a comment page. I mean, let's be real about this. If there's real resistance, there would have been at council, they would have been at committee meetings.
At the same time, if this exact same deal had been negotiated by a reelected Alvin Brown, I don't think it would have been unanimous. Right now, City Council, they like Sam Moussa, they like Mayor Curry. Curry's still in his
honeymoon
phase.
They're scared of Sam Moussa. They don't like him. They're scared of him. Mm-hmm. Sam Moussa rules the roost. He is mm-hmm. a straw that stirs the drink.
Mm-hmm. And we have a comment here on, it says, comment on the new amphitheater from Scott via email. And also welcome to Tim Gibbons, who has joined our media roundtable. Good morning, Tim.
Good to be here.
Scott on email says, what about how the city wants to raise the sales tax for all of us? I was for this as it could help our schools, but now I'm not, as the city is spending my tax dollars on frivolous projects like this amphitheater. Who wants to respond to that?
He's conflating a number of different issues.
AG.
Yeah, the bed tax, you know, I mean, we're talking about borrowed money here. That's one thing. But nobody's really talking about the financing this deal. You know, we're talking about it as a bed tax deal. The school board tax is really kind of an interesting issue, because if that happens, that's going to impede what Lenny Curry can do going forward. You know, if a tax is needed, you know, for Shan somehow, if the legislature approves that, or, you know, if you have something to go to the pension obligation that's been discussed. I mean, you can only have so much taxation before you become a tax and spend liberal. So, you know,
there's also both legal and as well as political caps on how much they can raise the sales tax.
Right.
We also have a call from Tom on the west side. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Good morning to y'all. I just think this is an outrageous waste of our city funds, and we're looking at the opportunity cost that's lost here that locks the city into doing nothing but funding the Jaguars for the next 25 years as far as tourism. And we're also throwing away the money that we invested in Metropolitan Park, as apparently this is going to take its place. And, I'm just absolutely opposed to any more giveaways to Shad Khan. He keeps coming to the city with his hands open, asking for more.
All right. Thanks for your comment, Tom. Panel, is this a giveaway to Shad Khan?
To a certain extent, absolutely. But that's sort of the price you pay to have major sports teams in the city. I mean, Oakland is likely going to lose both its football and its baseball team in the next 3 to 5 years, because they've more or less said, we're not paying anything for this anymore. You know, San Francisco saw its football team move to Santa Clara because they wouldn't do it. Now, if you want to have, as absurd as it sounds, all these billionaires expect to basically be funded by the taxpayers. They become socialists when it comes to this issue. And unfortunately, it's the price of having a major sports team.
And you have the argument that the city is getting, you know, whatever, a dollar's worth of assets for 50 cents. So,
sure.
You know, is it a give out? Well, it's city money going to a project in which private money is also being committed.
Yeah. And you're referring to, of course, the city would own the amphitheater and practice field and technically lease it to the team.
Technically own it, which basically means that they have to cover the maintenance costs. I mean, the benefit, the ownership benefit of actually making money out of it does accrue to Shad Khan.
You know, corporate welfare is the buy-in, though. I mean, you look down south, the Florida Panthers just got $86 million of bed tax money from Broward County. No strings attached, no improvements, just we're going to keep you here to keep you afloat. So, you know, if you look at it in the context of that particular deal, football versus hockey, you know, and so on, there actually is a benefit for the city. But, you know, like I said before, it's a generational commitment. This is the thing that Lenny Curry and this council are going to hang their hats on and say, this is the improvement I brought to the city.
What do you think about this deal? 549-2937 is the number to join the conversation. Kurt is on hold right now from Orange Park. Kurt, you're on the air.
Hi. I just worry about the idea of what we call rent-seeking, where people with political power influence legislative bodies to pass laws that actually put money in their pockets. Shad Khan wants an indoor arena. The cost of the amphitheater versus the arena is probably pennies on the dollar. Very, very cheap to construct. And I think he just throws that in as a sweetener on the deal. And what we're doing is we're paying taxpayer money in order for Shad Khan to get his indoor arena, and he gets revenue from it, and the city, from what I understand, gets enough to cover the maintenance of the facilities, but that's about all, which, you know, takes money away from our other things that we need, like education and crime control and all the rest of that stuff. So the rent-seeking is what bothers me when politically powerful people get legislative bodies to vote to put money in their own pockets. The poor people can't do that, and I'm in the middle class, and I can't do that. It just bothers me.
Thank you for your comments, Kurt. And, of course, during the council meeting on Tuesday, you had comments from members saying, I wish we could spend this money on police. I wish we could spend this money on education. But we simply can't because of the structure of how bed taxes can be used.
Oh, shucks. We just can't do it.
But is there nowhere else we can spend the money?
Claire?
Is there nowhere else we can spend the money, though? There's got to be other ways that we could have spent it. But I still do think that it probably is for the best that we spent this money on Everbank. But I wonder what the return of investment is, really. I mean, Crescenbeny was saying the other day, Councilman John Crescenbeny was saying that we're investing in our asset. But what is the return on that investment? Are we just saying the return is people coming to town to go to Jags games, buying, things at the stadium, people that are employed by Everbank Field and by the Jaguars? I mean, is that really what the return is, or is there actually a dollar amount?
City Council should...
You know, I think there's a misrepresentation of the deal. You know, the city actually does have usage rights to the Flex Field and to the amphitheater, negotiate with Jaguars approval, A. B, you know, why isn't the money going to the Maritime Museum? Because the Maritime Museum didn't hire the 20th City Councilman, Paul Harden. I mean, that's the reality. You want stroke in that city, you hire Paul Harden.
So you have to spend money on hiring people in order to get the council to do the right
money,
thing?
Welcome
money
to Duval.
That's yes. The way it works.
Right, and there is we talk about the return on investment, and the problem is that professional sports do not have an ROI to a city that's easily quantifiable, other than do we not want to have the Jaguars? I mean, you can easily say it's not worth having the team here, but, you know, as AG said earlier, nobody wants to be the mayor who let them go.
Let's go to the phones. Sheila is on the line from Ponte Vedra. Sheila, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just had one comment. I guess it would be that I feel the expansion to having the amphitheater is really about self-containment. We go to JAG games ourselves, but you don't invest money other than paying for parking. All of your expenditures are at the stadium. And so I don't often see that the argument about it benefiting the downtown core is really there. You go in, you spend your time within the stadium owned by Shad Khan, and you leave. And I'd really love to see more discussion about how we could be spending that kind of money on other kinds of institutions and gathering places in downtown Jacksonville that are more than just a once-a-week opportunity. Thanks.
Thanks, Sheila. Now we go to Jeff in Jacksonville. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, ma'am. I'm originally from Savannah, Georgia, and I don't want us in Jacksonville to fall into the tourism trap. The tourism industry and hospitality industry jobs do not pay a decent wage. They do not pay benefits. There's no future in it. And if the tourism industry was going to benefit the people of Savannah, it would have already done that, because we have tons of hotels and motels and restaurants, and tourism does not benefit the people. And we should not be suckered into making a billionaire richer while we're not helping the people of Jacksonville.
Thank you, Jeff, making a similar point that maybe the impact on the local economy not that great. AG?
Well, this is the thing. You know, Rick Scott and the Jacks Chamber would agree with you that tourism isn't the driver. I mean, that's why Rick Scott is pushing for Enterprise Florida funding, $250 million. That's why the Jacks Chamber is trying to, you know, brand around being, you know, a hub of technology and commerce. I mean, those are the realities. The tourism economy is very much boom and bust. But the Jaguars, you know, think the administration and, you know, obviously think the Jaguars are essential for Jacksonville's international profile, job recruitment trips, and, you know, so on. That is Jacksonville's hold card, having, you know, a team that is reasonably successful in a stadium that looks good on TV, because that is a recruitment tool and that is something that, you know, they're willing to invest in. They're trying to make Jacksonville make the leap to where we're not just, you know, a third-tier southern town, to where more second-tier, you know, sort of in the conversation with Charlotte, Tampa, Miami, and places like that.
Which is the other bit about that tourism dollars, where we say bed tax has to go for tourism usage. It specifically says things like stadiums, because Jacksonville is not a tourist town. You know, the Maritime Museum was not bringing in people from other places, although it was a really nice place, but it was, you know, it was a local sort of thing. Honestly, I think it would have been nice if it was saved, but it's not that Jacksonville will become a tourism town. It's that they can use this money on things like the stadium.
We have lots of calls on the line for this. Let's just take one more on this topic. Jason calling from San Marco. Jason, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I mean, I think obviously there's a level of interest in this topic that you could have this conversation once a week for the next year, and you'd hear a lot of good input from the citizens. I have two things to say. Number one is that, honestly, I am a season ticket holder, and the in-stadium experience at Everbank Field is probably the best experience in the NFL right now. Now, the team is not. But if he gets the team performing at a high level, we're going to have something pretty special going on down there. So I really don't have a profound disagreement with spending the money to improve the stadium. And if he can get this team anywhere near the playoffs or get the NFL to agree to bring a Super Bowl back to Jacksonville, and this stadium is what it can be, and these things are all in place when that happens, I think the whole citizenry of Duval County will look back and say it was money well spent. I also think that the city council and the leadership of this city is chronically plagued with a lack of imagination, but Shad Khan is not. He's got a lot of great ideas, and he's got money, and he's pushing his agenda. And unless someone steps up and pushes back, this guy's going to get a lot of what he wants. That's my opinion, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Jason, in support of the city council's vote.
I think if city council was asked to give Shad Khan money to buy a pass rusher or two, they'd do it in a heartbeat.
But I think if they were asked to give him a kidney, they'd do it in a heartbeat.
I wouldn't take kidneys from half of them.
All right, moving on from the Jaguars deal, also making headlines this week, a group of African-American pastors spoke out against expanding the city's human rights ordinance to include LGBT protections. This after last week, more than 70 faith leaders signed a letter in support of the same idea. Now, behind the scenes, there's been some name-calling by Pastor Kenneth Adkins, calling the Reverend R.L. Gundy a sellout for changing his mind on the issue after doing consulting work for the Human Rights Campaign. More on that in a minute. But it's not just the name-calling. Adkins put out a flyer this week with Gundy portrayed as a slave on an auction block. Have you all seen this flyer? Yes. Have we seen this level of fighting over Jacksonville's HRO before? How does this compare to what we saw the last time this came before the city council? What are your thoughts on the ongoing community discussions on the HRO? Call now, 549-2937. Larry?
Well, Adkins is a provocateur. I've known him for several years. He knows how to get attention, and he's very conservative. He's probably one of the most conservative pastors in Jacksonville. You know, he backed Lenny Curry over Alvin Brown. I think he supported Mitt Romney over Barack Obama, though I could be wrong about that. But, you know, it's, you know, we're seeing this throughout the faith community. There's a lot more pastors coming out in favor of the HRO, and those that are still opposed to it are furious about this. There's something of a civil war going on in the religious community over it. And this is not surprising that this is happening, because more and more people are supporting gay rights, supporting the HRO, and those that are not don't understand why people who were once with them are now against them.
I think we need to look at the actual press conference yesterday, because it represented a pivot moment. Fred Newbill, who was on the mayor's transition committee, who was speaking at the mayor's inauguration, who worked for John Delaney in economic development, you know, he's got a list on his resume that is legit incredible. Fred Newbill was the point man. He didn't use the kind of base rhetoric that the anti-HRO people have used over the last few weeks. And he also said that this is different from the civil rights struggle that African Americans encountered in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in this city. And, you know, with Fred Newbill being the point man on this, the rhetoric is different than, say, Atkins, who is a provocateur and performance artist, or Raymond Johnson, or any of these people. Those people you can discount. Fred Newbill has a seat at the table, and, you know, this represents, you know, perhaps a turning point in this debate, you know, as, you know, the African-American pastors say they want a referendum on this bill, and a referendum would not go over in favor of pro-HRO.
Now, Fred Newbill, he also said that he felt that the Civil Rights Act was all of the anti-discrimination legislation that we need. Now, if you look back in history, before the Civil Rights Act was passed, there was less support for that than there is today in this country for an anti-discrimination bill for LGBTs. Several polls have mirrored this. And I would wonder, who would it hurt to have an HRO in Jacksonville? Honestly, the only person it would hurt would be someone who wants to discriminate against an LGBT in their residential or in their job. And I don't think that we should be cowtailing around those interests.
This is political consultants against political consultants. Don't get it twisted. This isn't about what the people want. This is about what the operatives want on both sides, local and national.
So you don't think this is what the LGBT community wants?
No, what I think is that what the battle we're going to see is between two groups of political operatives. I mean, what the people of Jacksonville want is not as relevant to this debate as, you know, how it's framed, you know, by these people coming in to frame it on both sides.
And that was how the entire debate was structured, with these community conversations, where you basically have a discussion about, is there discrimination in Jacksonville? Well, if you don't believe there is, this isn't going to change your mind. And if you know there is, it's not going to change your mind either. So you end up with this conversation leading nowhere, setting the stage for a referendum, which allows the mayor to you know, kind of wash his hands of the entire thing and make either nobody or anybody happy, depending on how you look at it.
But the business community wants this. It wants it very bad, because they genuinely believe that they're going to have trouble getting businesses into Jacksonville without an HRO. I mean, we're already seeing a few signs that Houston is suffering for throwing out their HRO.
Right, Houston is starting at a better base than we are. Yeah. So, you know, if it's bad for them, you know, it's not like we have a big convention business as it is, but if Houston is losing conventions, you know, Jacksonville defeats us for a second time, that's not good.
And if we want to stop being a third-tier city of the South, we need to have an HRO in the city.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Like, Google, you know, is backing away from Houston because of its HRO issues. Right now, we've got the Google Fiber Project. This is something that the council president and the mayor have messaged around. They want this thing to happen. It's one of those next-level moves, to quote the previous mayor. But if we have an HRO debate that's decisive and that has, you know, itinerant preachers talking about bathrooms, Google will walk away. They'll go someplace else that has legislation that, you know, fits with the rest of the country.
On the line, Margaret in San Marco wants to join the conversation. Margaret, good morning.
Good morning. I want to respond to the question of who will it hurt. I'm one of those who opposes this, and I opposed it in 2012 when it came before the city council. My concern with that is most of us who are opposing it are not in the least interested in policing anybody's bedroom. So that's not the issue. But the concern is with the consequences to religious liberty and freedom of speech that would result, at least as a serious risk, if this is passed. Because if we look at what happened in other cities where similar ordinances are in place, there may be protections for large groups, like churches and religious institutions, but the private individual who wants to follow their conscience in that business matters and how they educate their children and so on, there's less and less protection for them. We've just recently had cases where a baker was put out of business because she wouldn't decorate a wedding cake for a gay wedding. She had had the same gay people coming to her for years and had baked for them, had taken care of their needs, no discrimination against them because they were gay, but she did not want to participate in actively promoting and celebrating something which she believed to be sin. The same way with a florist that was put out of business because she wouldn't cater to a gay wedding for people who she had provided flowers for years. Those kind of situations are just a small part. In Madison, Wisconsin, an ordinance like this was in place, and a group of two women were forced to have a lesbian in their home because they advertised for someone to share rent in a four-bedroom house. And in their own living space, they were required to keep to rent to anybody who came. And the law upheld them. These type of situations only happen if there's a legal precedent that allows lawsuits to be brought in these cases. So I think we have to look at this and say, is the law, if we change it, is it going to create worse disorders than the problems it's designed to correct? And we should look at what's happening in other cities,
Margaret,
where such ordinances are already in place.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your call, Margaret. AG, you have a response?
Oh, yeah. I'm always amazed at how concerned the religious right is with independent florists and bakers. I respect that a lot. And that was kind of the laundry list of alarmism there. Those cases that have been mentioned over and over in these debates are sort of the worst case scenarios. And that's the thing. You've got a city council with 19 people. All of them were smart enough to get elected. There are five committees in council. You know, they can work out issues and exceptions in the bill, you know, protecting, you know, people renting out rooms in their houses, protecting small businesses. I mean, that's the kind of bill that's going to pass when it is actually worked through in the committee process where people are trying to negotiate to get to yes, instead of what happened 3 years ago when you had somebody flip, you know, on the council floor saying he was confused and you buried the issue for 3 years. If council was, you know, making a good faith effort to get this done, they will handle these exceptions in, you know, the committee process and make it something that, you know, people who have, you know, opposition to this bill right now can actually live with.
But let's be clear about one thing here. The baker that had to close down was not shut down by the government. It's because when they refused to serve the gay couple, multiple people refused to patronize their place anymore, gay and straight. The problem a lot of people opposed to this have is that being against homosexuality is becoming socially unacceptable, just like being supporting segregation in the 60s became socially unacceptable. You know, that's happening no matter what the law is. More and more, if you believe gay people are evil or mentally ill or something, people will shun you because they think you're backwards and stupid.
That was a market response, not a yes. government response. Mm-hmm. And Mark is calling from St. Augustine. Mark, good morning.
Hey, good morning. As a libertarian, I really don't have much of a dog in this fight. But one thing I do think that is kind of interesting, you had this topic about a week or so ago. And at that time, a week ago, there were two high school football teams who were going to play for a championship down in Orlando. And they were both Christian teams, and they were denied the right to pray before the game at the field. Well, I kind of feel that some of the folks on the religious side might feel that they are forever being asked to alter or bend their beliefs at the behest of the government. But yet, on the other side, when LGBT community or another community might feel slighted in some way, it doesn't appear that they're being asked to bend their beliefs a little bit. That was just a comment I wanted to make.
Sure, Claire.
I really don't think that they were being asked to alter their beliefs. They were being asked not to use a public forum for a Christian prayer. Let's be very clear about the fact that the separation of church and state means exactly that, that these public forums aren't a place for a public prayer. I mean, people are allowed to practice their own religion. What if that prayer had been a Muslim prayer? I really doubt that a lot of Christians would have been up in arms over someone being deprived their religious liberty to express their beliefs in the Muslim religion.
You know, they were actually allowed to pray at the 50-yard line, according to the FHSAA. That's a good acronym. I talked to them, and they basically said that the issue was that the organization is a state actor, so they couldn't permit a loudspeaker prayer. You know, one team was happy with that, one team wasn't, but, you know, Supreme Court precedent is that they could not facilitate that prayer officially. They could not stop the teams from gathering and praying either, and that was the compromise arrived at.
We're a changed country, and it's a difficult thing to deal with. But this idea of, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, yeah, you could have a Christian prayer on a loudspeaker because that's what everybody was, or if they weren't, they would be, you know, just sit there in silence. Now people are more aware of this is, you know, you should not have, you should not impose your beliefs through the government action on people. And that's a hard thing to adjust to.
We are less Christian now than we've ever been in our country's history, and we're becoming less so every year. More and more people either don't have a religion at all, or they have a religion that's not Christian, just like we're becoming much less white than we used to be. And that's a major adjustment for a lot of people.
Sure. Also, moving on, also in the news, we didn't know whether they would keep the Skyway or scrap it. But yesterday, the JTA board approved a plan to modernize the Skyway. The plans call for replacing cars with newer models and considering extending the Skyway's route. What do you think? Is it a good idea? Call us now, 549-2937. So it's not
AG
dead.
Looks overjoyed about it.
I sat so in happy. On virtually all of those Skyway meetings. Uh-huh. It was a preordained result. Mm-hmm. That poll they produced, polling 1,000 people, and that was self-selected. It was not a poll with any credibility whatsoever, yet they used that as to make the case that they wanted to make all along. I mean, you have somebody like Tommy Azzurri, the council liaison to that committee, basically saying that it was a farce, and you know they just pushed right through and they did it anyway. So, you know, when you look at, you know, this media campaign, the JTA is running in favor of the Skyway, you know, and they put this $80 million or whatever into the new cars, whatever it's going to be. Look at ridership. Look at revenue that's going to be produced from it. It's not going to go up. You know, usage patterns are what they are. And if they expand the Skyway, you know, pour more money into it, you still got the issue that those cars are pretty small. So what are you paying per trip, per person, you know, with the Skyway renovation?
Well, it's not like you have an engineer running each car. I mean, the size of the car doesn't matter.
No, you're just paying for these cars and you're having them custom fabricated.
All right. You know, if we got rid of the Skyway, we would have to give back a lot of money to
over
the federal government.
$100 million.
Yeah, which is a very serious.
Yeah, with that, the federal,
depending on how we negotiate it.
So extending this to the stadium would obviously be as a tourist, you know, attract tourists.
Good idea.
You're telling me that bed tax money couldn't be used for this?
Exactly. That's a great idea.
Maybe Shad Khan should ask for some money to extend the Skyway.
I think he should.
Sell naming rights.
All right. The phones are lighting up. Ken is calling. Ken, good morning.
Good morning. I want to make a statement on that Skyway.
Sure.
When that Skyway came, everybody knew that that was kind of a pink elephant. But when it came, that money came from Ronald Reagan, and it was brought here by Arthur Teal. And that money came, and it had to be spent on something new. It was not allowed to go and supplement what you already had here, bus system for mass rapid transit. And that's the best that we could get out of that money with the amount that we had. And we were not going to send that money back to Washington. That's why that thing ends up as small and as useless as it started out. It's because we were not going to send that money back. We were going to use it for something. And at the time, there were some contractors locally who made some money. And there were some working guys and construction guys who were put to work and made some money on that for a short period of time. And that's why we have that thing. And we just got to come to grips with that. And a lot of people have short memories. But that's how that thing ended up here. And if we can work with it, then we probably ought to. Thank you.
Ken, thanks for the history lesson.
Well, actually, the history lesson goes back farther because the Skyway's planned in the 70s, back when downtown had department stores and was thriving before the malls basically killed it. By the time it was built, it was the mid-80s, and you saw the big department stores of the golden age of downtown leave. Right. So basically, there was an issue with planning and execution. And, you know, our two big ideas in the city have been consolidation and the Skyway. And, you know, both of them are typified by a similar, you know, delayed reaction. You know, we've got a plan. We don't amend it. It's kind of like Gus Bradley's football team in that respect.
Are you coming out against consolidation?
No, not at all. But I'm saying that consolidation's promise was never actually fully realized. You go up to District 7, 8, 9, and 10, you see the infrastructure from the old days.
The assumption when the Skyway was being designed, because I actually went back through our clips a few years ago and read from the start, was that downtown would still be the major shopping area. Yep. And the idea was also to prohibit parking downtown and encourage the Skyway's use. But of course, JTA had no control over who built parking garages. So we had all these parking garages built by a city council that didn't care what JTA's plan was. And so there's never been a good plan for the Skyway because JTA's been in charge of the Skyway and city council has no real interest in what JTA is doing.
Terry is calling from Nocatee. Good morning, Terry. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. I own the family website, Fun for FirstCoastKids.com. We work about twice a month with Hemming Park to bring families downtown. And one of the fun things they do is ride the Skyway, but they just kind of get on and ride down and back. So I think education and teaching the kids that you could park outside of downtown, ride in, use public transportation, have fun with all the new shops that are happening downtown, all the Hemming Park events, Unity Plaza events. We could teach people about public transportation, the kids that are coming up. Additionally, living in Nocatee, we have hundreds and hundreds of people that drive their cars all the way down US 1, 295, or 95 to downtown, and there's traffic all along the way, on the way back. If we could do some kind of connector to get people from Nocatee to downtown and then onto the Skyway, it would be a useful thing and a great thing for the funds of downtown and Jacksonville.
Thanks for the comment, Terry. And now going to Don. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. I've been here since the day they originally started the Skyway. It was always intended to be a seed project, and later on we were to add more links and more legs to it. We now have an opportunity. Apparently there may be some money out there. We need to proceed with the plan, add more legs to it, come up with a viable system. If Jacksonville wants to grow and be a true metropolitan city, we need to make sure we add more systems similar to the Skyway.
All right. Thank you, Don. And now going to Josh in San Marco. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, good morning. I agree with everyone. Let's extend it. Let's become a really great city and a destination for jobs and for, of course, for the tourism dollars, but let's take it to the airport also.
There you go.
You know, we are putting $100 million JTAs in the First Coast Flyer, basically express buses that are going up and down the corridors. That is the plan that, you know, JTA actually has for real meaningful mass transit that connects the city. You know, extending the Skyway, you know, all over the place with the fixed structure, with cars that have to be replaced every so often. You know, that looks great, but, you know, going back to that first caller from Nocatee, if she wants to teach her kids about mass transit, have them take one of these empty buses that's going around town all the time.
That would teach you the lesson. Yeah. The problem is that transit is a system, and transit doesn't work if you have one little piece of it, and everybody talks about extending it, but honestly, I guarantee you try to, if somebody gave the city the money to extend the Skyway to Nocatee, the opposition from people in Nocatee would be immense. People don't actually want this sprawling fixed mass transit thing. You know, it's not what we do in Florida.
The Skyway was always meant to just be downtown. The idea was to then have some sort of commuter rail system that would connect to the Skyway. So if you were coming from Orange Park, say, you take a train in, then get off somewhere and take the Skyway to your final destination. Building something like the Skyway is just too expensive to go all over Northeast Florida. But the problem was that the Skyway was supposed to be the first leg and they never built any other legs.
There was also a proposal for hovercraft going to Green Cove Springs and a gondola going across the river,
there really was a proposal for the Skyweb Express, which is a much cheaper system that is very similar to the Skyway that we could easily implement with this money that we're going to pour into these antiquated cars that have to be, I guess they're going to rebuild new cars at this stage.
They're artisanal, handcrafted hipster cars.
I bet they are. Do you get a growler every time you ride one?
We have more calls on the line. We do not have time to get to those calls. And sadly, there is no Only in Florida this week, but that is only because we're saving up all the best stories for next week, which is our final edition of First Coast Connect Media Roundtable of 2015. Tune in a week from today.
And no one in Florida did anything stupid this week.
Of course not. And Melissa Ross will be back from D.C. to host again on Monday. Let's talk about Melissa for a moment.
Yeah, let's talk about her. I've got some things to know. I've heard her on the Diane Rehm show the last couple of days. She's been great. She's coming on after the show at 10 o'clock. You're going to want to listen to that because, I mean, Melissa Ross is somebody that is becoming a national presence, and I'm hearing about that from people well outside of Jacksonville.
I wonder if Shad Khan can invest in her.
Yeah, we're very proud of Melissa, and we hope she comes back and doesn't have a big head.
We certainly are. Tune in again at 10 for the National Media Roundtable with Melissa Ross on the Diane Rehm Show. And thank you so much to our Media Roundtable this morning, Larry Hannon, Tim Gibbons, A.G. Gankarski, and Claire Gofor. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Coming up next, a One Spark favorite is growing. We'll speak with the man behind the local toy company, Pajama Monsters. We'll be right back with more on First Coast Connect.
Well, that sounds intriguing, David, doesn't it? We'll have
I'm
to be
ready
back for
that,
that segment.
And Melissa at 10.
I know, Melissa at 10. I tell you what, it's just exciting times around here, especially that in that it is a pledge drive, an end-of-the-year pledge drive. And I'm Michelle Corum. I'm here with David Luckin. And we know that you rely on NPR and WJCT as one of the few places where you can still get real in-depth journalism. And our news department works on that every day. We bring you stories across the board, across the community that are done with balance and with knowledge and using sources that know what they're talking about. And that's part of what we do for you every day here in the news department. Now, I know we have all kinds of other stuff happening.
We have all kinds of things happening on our air. And if you've ever thought about making a financial contribution to WJCT, don't put it off any longer. Today is your day. This is the end of the year. This puts you in a good position for next year where you'll hear all the great programs that you've come to expect from us. All you have to do is give us a call, 904-353-9528, or you can go to WJCT.org. That just takes about less than a minute, about 45 seconds to give us your vital information, and you will be a part of this station. You'll be a contributor, an investor, and a partner. So when you call 904-353-9528 or go to WJCT.org, you'll know you've done your part. You'll have a good feeling. You start your weekend knowing that you got great programming coming for another year.
If you've thought about making a financial contribution, you don't want to put it off. You can go right now to the phones or you can go to the computer to WJCT.org. All of it just takes a few minutes and you'll have the good feeling, like David said, of having supported this public radio station. So we're asking you not to put it off. We're also asking you to remember that it is the end of the year. Great time to make that end of the year contribution, that last minute contribution. You think about how often you've listened to this public station, watch the television, listen to the radio all year round in 2015. And we ask that you make your contribution of support before the year runs out. And you know that WJCT has been a great resource for you for news and information, analysis, a wide range of perspectives that you hear that inspire you to help, to think and help you to understand what the issues are, to help you grow in your life. It's a reflection on you and your values. And we're all about independent journalism here, and that's also what WJCT News is known for.
And Michelle, in the coming year, there'll be no shortage of news, all the crazy things going on in the world, plus an election year, so you're going to count on us more than ever. 353-9528 is the number to call to be connected with us and to support us. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or anytime at all online at wjct.org.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect. I'm Jessica Palumbo, sitting in for Melissa Ross. Finally this hour, looking to help kids be less afraid of things that go bump in the night by giving them a monster friend of their own. Pajama Monsters was a favorite at the first One Spark Festival in 2013, with a line of cuddly plush monster dolls and a book titled If Your Monster Wears Pajamas. The company's been taking off ever since. Here to tell us more about what's on the horizon is Pajama Monsters creator Hank Champion. Hank, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jessica. It's great to be here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And you've been working on this idea for Pajama Monsters now for about 10 years, right?
Yeah. It started, like so many things, out of necessity. I was working as an advertising guy in New York, and I got laid off, and I thought it'd be like about half a year or something before I got another job. So I was an illustration and design major in college, and so I gave myself an assignment. And there were three subjects I picked: angry vegetables, fish in space, and baby monsters wearing pajamas. And so I went with with baby monsters wearing pajamas, and that turned into 30 drawings, and I honed that down to my favorite five and had them turned into little dolls by a friend that was working on Broadway, so she could do anything. Yeah. So it was pretty cool. And then I got a job a lot sooner than I thought. So they got shelved, and eventually I'm originally from the South and wanted to get back down here and was fortunate enough to land in Jacksonville, my new adopted hometown. I've been here for 8 years.
Okay.
And they eventually came back out and made their way to OneSpark. And it was funny, at OneSpark we just had prototypes. You know, there wasn't anything as refined as what I have here.
Yes.
And you can see them at pajamamonsters.com, though. There's my plug. And anyway, though, we just were so well received. And what was funny is kids got it right away, you know, and moms loved it. And so, you know, just got a lot of attention there and a lot of PR and came back again. And then we went to the New York Toy Show and started again with just the prototypes and actually wound up being one of the top toy trends of 2014.
Wow.
And we didn't even have product.
So, okay, when you say kids got it right away, what do you think it is when they look at these that they get right away?
I think, you know, everybody remembers when they were a kid, you know, it's like your teddy bear is your buddy. It's kind of like Calvin and Hobbes. You know, to him, the lion, the tiger is real, you know.
Right.
And I think to a kid, you know, they process so much through imagination and through fantasy play that, you know, they see these things and they go, right, you know, this guy's my buddy. He's going to protect me in the dark. You know, he's going to stay awake while I sleep. And, you know, that just gravitates. I've read to kids, like I read to a group of 70 kindergartners to a school in the Upper West Side. And that was pretty cool because these were kindergartners and they were riveted for the whole time. And they kind of made me feel like a C-level rock star, you know, and it was pretty cool. And they get it, you know.
Did you write the story that goes along with them
too?
Yeah,
I co-wrote the story with Megan Champion and then I illustrated the stories and it was just part of a dream come true for me because what was funny is, in college, I'd always wanted to have a children's story and for many years, but I just never had the ideas. And it's kind of like, you know, if you ever heard Barry Manilow talk about when he wrote jingles that prepared him for writing pop songs. And so for years of doing storyboards for TV commercials and stuff like that, I was able to condense that down and create a children's book out of it and have plans for more.
Okay, so I want to meet a couple of these monsters. Oh. Who is this right here on the table? I'm holding, he's a gray guy with a cute pink face and some fangs.
That's right. And his name is Stinky. And he's the ringleader of the group. And he got his name because he carries cheese in his pocket for snacking all the time.
Oh, of course.
And he can throw it at the bad guys, too. It's magic cheese. It never runs out.
Okay. I could see why kids would like something called Stinky.
Absolutely. And parents identify, any parent that's had it, you know, knows that at one time or another they call their kids Stinky. it's natural. And then next up, this is Daisy. She's a giant slug, but she's always dressed in pink and she's beautiful. And I always like to tell the moms, even if you wake up and feel like a slug, you can still be beautiful.
Mm.
And then last, you know, there's a few more. This one's Fluffy. You can't see it, but Fluffy's a yellow bunny and she's got fangs. And I always tell the kids, you know, we call her Fluffy the Insomniac Vegan Vampire Bunny because after all, bunnies only bite fruits and vegetables. So the kids are safe.
And then I identify with Fluffy.
Yes, a lot of people do, especially people that have sleeping problems or don't like to eat meat. They get Fluffy very quickly.
Yeah.
And then since I was an art major, I made one that's missing an ear. His name is Vincent. He's named after Van Gogh. And that stuff, kids don't care as much about that, but it's kind of fun because it gives parents a chance to talk about stuff. And if they get stuck reading this book every night, I try to throw some jokes in for them too.
Okay. Hank, so which one is your favorite?
Well, Stinky was the first. So he was the very first one I ever drew. And so he's always been my favorite.
Okay. You know,
there's probably most like me.
So you have a special promotion going on now leading up to the holidays. Tell us about that.
Really excited about that. I mean, Pajama Monsters, the idea was always to you know, one, to have fun, but also to give something back and to help kids. So I talked to Wolfson's and they said I could say their name. And
that's the Children's Hospital.
Wolfson's Children's Hospital. So for every Pajama Monster, every time we sell two Pajama Monsters, not two at a time, but just for every two or pair that we sell and every two books, we're going to donate one to Wolfson's. And so we're doing that through December. And so whether you buy one at, you know, the retailers that are here in town, can I say their names? Or
sure.
Okay, San Marco Books and Wolf and Cub, the pop-up store behind Wi-Fi Burger, they've both been big supporters. Or if you go to the website we're going to donate one. So
okay, so two purchased, one gets donated to Wilson's.
And you don't have to buy two. It's just kind of half of basically everything I sell between started in November and through December.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That is Hank Champion with Pajama Monsters, and the website is pajamamonsters.com.
That's it.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. That is our program, folks. Thanks to all of our guests and our callers today. The show's producer is Sean Birch. Have questions or comments about First Coast Connect? Send us an email at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Coming up next, our very own Melissa Ross is hosting the Diane Rehm Show. She'll be joined by a panel of journalists to analyze the week's top national news stories. That's up next. I'm Jessica Palumbo. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back again at 9 on Monday. Have a great weekend.
353-9528 is the number you should call. And guess what, Michelle? We've got a huge gift today, a $20,000 gift, which means everyone who donates and contributes today is matched up to $20,000. So if you want to give us $100, okay, it's $200. If you give us $1,000, which we had one offer of that Monday, it's $2,000. So give what you can. It's the end of the year. It's tax deductible. It's the right thing to do to support your public radio station with as little or as much as you can. $5 a month is fine. $100 a month. We had someone call this morning at $20 a month. Find a level that fits your budget and give us a call. 353-9528.
Right. We have a lot of people behind us wanting to see us succeed. And this is the end of the year. Many listeners have started giving just a little money every month rather than one big amount once a year. And that makes it an affordable way to support all your favorite programs and make sure that we have the money it takes to keep bringing those special programs to you. So give a little every month. That's one of the good ways. And also, you can, if you pledge a certain amount a month at a $60 level, you can get those earbuds with a mic. That's a free gift with that. And also $120 level, it's a power bank charger. That's about a $10 a month of giving, sustaining. $120 for that Stay Connected USB charger. We ask you to call right now at 353-9528. Your money's going to go farther because we also have Jacques Klemp, the owner of Dixie Egg Company and partner in Forking Amazing Restaurants, who has made a challenge to us to hit the goal.
20,000.
Very
nice. That's
great.
So if we hit 20, it's instantly 40. You're listening to WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida, 89.9 on your dial, because folks just like you make it all possible. Without your support, we would never give that legal ID, would we?
That's right.
We wouldn't be on the air. So we want to thank everyone who's called so far today. This is the last day of our three-day little mini end-of-the-year giving drive. It's been good fun. We've got lots of support. We need your support now. So we thank everyone in advance for sharing your wealth with us. 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. And thank you.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.